Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Headlines around the world are filled with breaking news about the latest updates related to the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. We watch as the streets of Italy are deserted, press conferences in both Canada and the United States fill the airwaves. The numbers steadily climb daily, people are getting sick, and people are dying. There is a lot to process if you're sitting at home trying to wrap your head around it all, especially sitting here in Northumberland as we watch all this going on around us. The questions are many and the answers are not always clear. There are some excellent sources of good information. Still, there is plenty of bad information and fear-mongering, particularly on social media. We are very lucky to have in the studio today someone who is very knowledgeable and has lots of experience dating back to the SARS epidemic, which hit Canada in 2003. I am so pleased to have on the phone Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge and District Health Unit Executive Director, Dr. Lynn Noseworthy. Thank you for being on Consider This, Dr. Noseworthy.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay. We are being told by the Public Health Agency of Canada that the health risks associated with COVID-19 is low for Canada. And yet each day we watch the numbers of cases rise along with the number of deaths. Well, just the other day it seemed out of the blue we hear there's a case in Sudbury of all places. But what are the chances of coronavirus being diagnosed in Northumberland?
At this point in time, the risk is low within Northumberland County. Now, my health unit covers Northumberland County, the city of Kawartha Lakes, and Halliburton County. And as I said, the risk is low. But we do know that people are traveling, not as much as they had been. And so it may happen that someone may show up within our health unit area who has coronavirus. But there are measures in place to quickly identify people and put control measures in place to mitigate or reduce the probability of spread of that infection. Coronavirus infection itself usually causes a mild illness. However, unfortunately, some people have a more severe illness and some people actually die from the disease.
So am I correct in understanding at this particular time then, just to emphasize this, no one has been diagnosed in Northumberland, is that correct?
No one has been diagnosed within my health unit area with COVID-19, this new coronavirus.
Okay. Now, I know that some people might be being tested. Do we know if there are testing? Is testing going on? Is there been any of that kind of thing taking place?
Testing is going on within our health unit area, yes. And we've had no cases diagnosed within our health unit area.
Now, is there anybody within the health unit's area that you might be aware of that has reported or are being self-isolated? In other words, they're staying at home as a precautionary measure.
I think there have been people who have had to do that, but I don't believe we have any more in self-isolation.
Okay. Now, we hear a lot of terms being bounced around in the media, things like epidemic and pandemic, and then there's a global pandemic. Can you help us understand these terms?
Well, the WHO Executive Director General had a media conference yesterday, and I'll take some excerpts from his interview. He said, pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly. It's a word that, if misused, can cause unreasonable fear or unjustified acceptance that the fight is over, leading to unnecessary suffering and death. And describing the situation as a pandemic does not change the WHO's assessment of the threat posed by this virus. It doesn't change what WHO is doing, and it doesn't change what countries should do. So that's in relation to a pandemic. Within our health unit area, every year, we have 70 to 80 outbreaks primarily within our long-term care facilities. And they are caused by a variety of respiratory viruses or viruses that can cause what we call enteric illness, vomiting and diarrhea, that sort of thing. So that's what an outbreak is. It's usually within a confined community, like in a long-term care, like in a daycare setting, mm-hmm. whereas a pandemic is worldwide, and that's the difference. But a pandemic usually relates to a novel virus as well, mm-hmm. whereas the outbreaks that we have within our geographic area and on a yearly basis happen everywhere. Any place that has a group of people who live in sort of communal settings, like in a long-term care facility, like in on a university campus, can have a higher risk of being exposed to a variety of viral illnesses. And because they live in such close proximity, they are more prone to having infections go from one person to the other.
So, for example, I think a couple of months ago, it was November or December, the hospital sent out a press release saying they had norovirus.
That's correct.
And there was extraordinary measures taken, and there was some rules put in place, and then that passed.
That's right.
And so that's the kind of thing that you're talking about that we experience normally.
Normally. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right.
And actually, the coronavirus is part of COVID-19 is part of a family of coronaviruses. And the coronavirus, the regular coronavirus, cause everything from the common cold to more serious illness. And the regular coronavirus circulates in our community from year to year. This is what's called a novel or a new coronavirus. And we haven't been exposed to it before, and so we saw it first emerge in Wuhan City within the province of Hubei in China, and we saw it unfold. We heard about it at the end of December last year, but it was probably circulating for a month or two before that period of time. And then it spread throughout the city of Wuhan and then further into the province of Hubei, and then finally into other provinces and cities within China. Since that time, it's spread to other countries. But China, through its measures, has been able to contain it for a longer period of time from leaving its borders. And that's been helpful to us for our preparation purposes.
Let's talk about preparation. Where do we stand in Northumberland in terms of preparedness?
Well, I think I need to talk about preparedness in the context of the entire health system and other parties.
Okay.
So public health is part of a health system, and each part has a role to play. The Public Health Agency of Canada, which is part of the federal government, provides guidance to provinces and territories, and it also provides guidance to the federal government about compliance that the government has to have with international requirements, for example, reporting of a variety of diseases, including COVID-19. Within Ontario, the Ministry of Health coordinates and funds the provincial health system, and it provides guidance and support. So I'm getting, I would guess, about 200 emails a day. Many of them are from colleagues, our local partners, but also from the province with guidelines that it's developed, it's updating, and it's sending out to health units, to hospitals, to primary care, to long-term care facilities, and to others, so that they can prepare from their perspective for the novel coronavirus or COVID-19. Public Health Ontario is a provincial agency that provides scientific support and expertise to the province, public health, and the broader health sector. We have different levels of hospitals within our community, and some provide acute care and emergency care, and some provide even more acute care services. We have primary care within our area, provided through our family health teams, our community health centers, group and solo practices, with physicians and nurse practitioners and others working with them. We also have long-term care homes and retirement homes, and we have about 20 long-term care homes and about 20 retirement homes throughout our geographic area. We also have 4 hospitals, Campbellford Memorial and Northumberland Hills Hospital in Northumberland County, but the Ross Memorial Hospital in the city of Coraco Lakes and Halliburton Highlands Health Services up in Halliburton. From a planning perspective for a pandemic, there are many planning tables federally, provincially, and locally. This is from a health perspective. Provincially, Ontario Health has a central command, and there are 5 regions across the province. So we are currently located in the East Region, which goes from the previous city of Scarborough to the Quebec border. And the Ontario Health Central Command is mobilizing the entire health system to prepare for COVID-19, which includes what each organization needs to do to ramp up its own particular response.
So it sounds to me like there's a lot of gears moving and a lot of hierarchies working together to try and deal with the situation. And you said earlier, too, that you get, 200 emails a day?
I get about 200 emails a day.
That's incredible. So how then do you parse that information? Can you give us maybe a bit of an example so that we can get our heads around? Say you get a particular set of emails. What do you do, and then how does that trickle down out into the community to help us?
Well, actually, we started preparing for a pandemic many years ago, and so we developed a pandemic plan, and we review it periodically. But when we heard of this novel coronavirus and the extent of its spread within China, we actually prepared to set up what we call our Incident Operations Center. So that's been in place since the 27th of January. And our Incident Operations Center meets about twice a week. I have key staff who meet with me. And I share the information that I get. I send it out to my management staff and to other key players within our organization. And so we have been working very diligently to do a variety of things, because our role in public health is to handle inquiries, and the inquiries could come from the media, members of the public, our health sector partners, our school boards, our municipalities, and other players in our community. We also do what's called case and contact management. And so to make that more easier for your listeners to understand, if we get a case of, say, measles reported to us, we would confirm the diagnosis. We would gather information from the case or the case's parent, because it might be a child. And then we would determine who the contacts of that case were, and then talk with those individuals to see what protective measures we need to work with them to implement to protect them from getting the measles. And then if we need to go further than immediate contacts, like within a school setting or a daycare setting, we would do that. If we need to go more public, using our media and other letting our health sector know, we would do that. So case and contact management is a key part of what our role is with COVID-19.
So what would happen then is just so that to help people understand, if there was a case identified, then you would be responsible for tracking it back to find where the source was, and then making sure that all the people were notified and all the institutions were notified and everybody, the communication was taking place that needed to happen.
That's correct. And also that the person had measures in place, because most of the people who have been identified with COVID-19 are self-isolating at home. That means they're staying home for a 14-day period, or until they have two swabs that are negative for COVID-19. And so we would be calling them every day to see how they're doing, because COVID-19 could affect anybody. And some people do not have access to sick leave, for example, from their work, may have difficulty accessing food or other supports. And so we would work with the person and other community agencies to ensure that that person has the support that he or she needs to stay in their home and to be safe and secure and to not suffer any untoward effect because of their circumstance.
So you would help then if somebody had to be isolated, you'd maybe phone their employer, or you might phone somebody else and, you know, could you bring groceries to this individual?
So we would work with the person to figure out what would work for them. Now, we wouldn't necessarily contact the employer. That's up to the individual.
Sure.
But we would work with them.
Okay.
So when I get emails, I would get emails that contain guidance for public health follow-up, for example, for case and contact management. I think we're on version 5 of that particular document. But when I get them, that information, I ensure that my appropriate staff are notified, and then they ensure that their staff go through the changes and they implement any new direction from the province. So it's a very labor-intensive process, and it's a very quick process because of email. I can send them out very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide messaging to our healthcare professionals, our schools, our municipalities, and other community partners. So we've been sending regular faxes out to our healthcare sector, information to our community partners on a weekly basis, to our schools, our municipalities. And we've been trying to amplify the messages that we're getting from senior levels, both provincially and federally. And we want to make sure that our information is accurate, so we're always checking to ensure we've got the most current version of whatever the guideline or document is. And so, as I said, it's a very labor-intensive purpose initiative.
So let's take a step back before we go too much further on that particular tangent. And you started to talk about what coronavirus and COVID-19 are. And can you just, you passed over really quickly, but what's the difference between coronavirus and then all of a sudden it seemed like its name changed to COVID-19? What happened there?
Well, there are many coronaviruses. I think there are about 5 or 6 or so that circulate anyway in the community. Like you get influenza circulating or parainfluenza or other viral illnesses. We have them circulating in our community periodically during what I would call flu season, which is from, it starts circulating from about October, November into about April or May. Mm-hmm. And so every time that we get notified of an outbreak in a long-term care facility, for example, we work with the facility to ensure that swabs are taken of residents who are ill, that they're sent to the public health lab for testing, and when we get the result back, we provide that information to the long-term care facility so that they can implement the appropriate control measures within their facilities. And the control measures for influenza include the taking of an antiviral medication to both prevent infection, but also to treat infection in those who are ill with influenza. Some other viral infections, of course, don't have any treatment for them, so they have to run their course, basically. But we work with our long-term care facilities on a regular basis to ensure that they have the most up-to-date infection prevention and control practices in place within their facilities to ensure that they rapidly detect if there is an outbreak going on and then implement the appropriate control measures to mitigate or shorten the length of the outbreak in that facility. And we've been working with our long-term care facilities for years to do that. We also work with our hospitals and other health sector partners to ensure that they follow up-to-date infection prevention and control practices.
So how does this virus compare to things like SARS, which I mentioned earlier, or H1N1 or Ebola or some of the other diseases that we've seen like that?
This COVID-19 virus is part of a family that the SARS virus is located, as well as the MERS, which is Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. And that was first identified in the Middle East, because that's their word's name. For this particular virus, they decided to call it COVID-19 because it was discovered in 2019. And the SARS virus had a higher case fatality rate than what the case fatality rate for this particular COVID-19 virus is. And likewise, the MERS virus has a higher fatality rate than this particular COVID-19 virus, but not as high as SARS. SARS seemed to affect mostly healthcare workers, where there were sicker people who were transmitting it, and they were first found within the healthcare sector, and that's when a lot of healthcare workers were infected as well, which was an issue during SARS, and that was 17 years ago.
Why is it so dangerous?
Why was the SARS so dangerous?
No, sorry, why is the COVID-19 so dangerous, pardon me?
Well, I wouldn't say it's so dangerous, because as I said before, most of the cases are mild.
Uh-huh.
Most of the cases, over 80% of the cases that we're aware of are mild, and we don't know what proportion of people who are infected may not have any symptoms at all. So we're still learning about it. This is a new virus within the human population, and as I said, it was first identified in China in 2019, and they think it originally came from bats, but they don't know what an intermediate host might have been. It might have been, they don't know what an intermediate host was. There's some speculation on it. Mm-hmm. But it was first identified in humans in 2019, and that's why it's called new or novel coronavirus.
Now, what are some of the symptoms that I might get if I've contracted the COVID-19?
With the COVID-19, the sorts of symptoms you might have are fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Now, in Ontario, almost all of the cases that have been identified have been associated with travel outside the province. And so there's that piece of the puzzle as well. Most of the cases were individuals who either traveled outside the province or were in close contact with someone who had traveled outside the province.
Okay, now how would it be different than, say, my regular flu or other illnesses that I might get at this time of year?
You may not be able to tell the difference.
Oh.
Unless someone gets a severe form of the illness, which is less than 20% might get a more severe form, and then less, a significant proportion less than that would die from it. So the case fatality rate is nowhere near what it was for SARS or MERS. We think it's a little bit higher than for influenza. We're not quite sure yet. Speculation around 2%, but we're not sure. We haven't seen that that kind of rate in Canada. So
what should I do then if I start to experience some symptoms? I'm not feeling that great. I've got a cough. I've got a bit of a fever. What would you suggest would be the best thing that I should do?
I think in general, people need to consider what you would do to try to prevent any sort of respiratory infection from spreading, not just the COVID-19 virus. And so you've heard a lot of us talk about washing our hands frequently and thoroughly with soap and water. You can also use hand sanitizer, alcohol-based hand sanitizer, if soap and water aren't available. You can cover your mouth and nose when you're coughing or sneeze. Cover your mouth and nose with a tissue or sneeze into a tissue, then throw the tissue into the garbage and wash your hands. If you don't have a tissue, cough or sneeze into your sleeve or your arm. Don't touch your face because we know that the COVID-19 is spread by droplets, so coughing and sneezing put these droplets into the air and onto surfaces, and you can get them on your hands, and then if you touch your face, particularly close to your eyes or your nose or your mouth, you can spread it that way. So we recommend you not touch your face unless you've washed your hands, and then wash your hands afterwards.
Okay, but those are preventative things right now. I'm really interested in, you know, if I'm not feeling well, should I be going to the doctor? Should I go to the emergency room? Should I go to a walk-in clinic? What should I do?
Well, you need to think about how sick am I? So, you know, first of all, at this point in time, I would say you'd have to have traveled or outside Canada and have had contact with someone who was diagnosed with COVID-19. And then you would be watching yourself for signs and symptoms. And then if you have signs or symptoms, you know, a cough, a fever, shortness of breath, you can contact telehealth. You can contact the health unit and have a discussion with a nurse. And then there will be some determination as to how severe your symptoms are, and then if you should be tested. And so there's that conversation between the individual, telehealth, health unit, or your family physician by phone. And then depending on how sick you are, the testing might be recommended, or they might recommend that you be seen in an emergency department. And if you have to go and seek medical attention, that you call ahead. And if we've been involved in the discussion, we would also call ahead to say so-and-so has contacted us and we'd like to make arrangements for them to go to the emergency department to be assessed.
So I noticed something here really, and I want to draw it out as something very important. What you're saying is don't rush off to the doctor. Make a call first, get some early assessment, talk to somebody, and then get advised to go to the emerge or see your doctor or a walk-in clinic. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, and actually the province just released a media release, which I got just before one of my many emails, just before we actually started speaking this morning. And the news release, and you can probably get it off online when we're finished our conversation. But it says the province is implementing enhanced measures to protect Ontarians from COVID-19. And one of the things it's doing to protect the public is to launch a province-wide public education campaign. It's also expanding the hours of its telehealth. I think it's setting up a website so that people can get some further information and to do a little bit of a self-assessment to decide, is this just a cold I have, or I've traveled back from someplace and now I have some respiratory symptoms. Maybe I should call telehealth. Maybe I should call the health unit. Or if it's if the person is severely ill, you know, maybe I need to be contacting and arranging for an ambulance to take me, depending on how sick the person is. So like, there's a whole continuum of I've got very minor symptoms to I'm short of breath and I need to have attention very quickly.
Well, listen, this is all fantastic, and I really appreciate the detail you're going into. But unfortunately, we've come to a time to take a break. So we're going to break away for some commercials. I am with Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit Executive Director, Dr. Lynn Noseworthy. We're talking about the coronavirus or COVID-19. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about prevention and steps that you can take and things that are going on in our community to help us battle this disease within our boundaries. So please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. I'm on the phone with Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit Executive Director, Dr. Lynn Noseworthy. Just before the break, we were talking about what I should do if I'm not feeling well. You've talked also about some preventative measures. There's a lot of talk about preparing myself if I have to be in isolation. Is there anything I should be doing or any of our listeners should be doing in advance to prepare themselves, family, friends, in case they should get sick? We've seen examples of hoarding and things like that. What do you recommend?
I think people, because we're all planning, so we're planning in public health, we're planning within our health sector, we're planning provincially, we're planning nationally, I think people also should be planning. And they should be thinking about what things do I need to have in place to ensure that my family and I are protected should there be more disease within our community. And then we don't have any community spread at this point in time within our community. So you might want to think about talking with people you want to include in your plan, so your household members and relatives and friends, to determine the needs of these people. Practice everyday prevention actions to reduce your risk of respiratory illness. And I talked a bit about washing your hands frequently, avoid touching your eyes and mouth, covering your mouth and nose. Stay home if you or a family member are ill. If you have to isolate someone within the home, choose a room so that you can separate a sick household member from everybody else in the house. Regularly clean and disinfect objects and high-touch surfaces within your home, such as doorknobs, fridge and cabinet handles, countertops, and light switches. Get your flu shot if you haven't had your flu shot yet to protect yourself from the flu. If you're ill and must visit a health provider or clinic or hospital emergency department, call ahead or tell them right away when you arrive that you've got a respiratory illness, and they will ensure that you wear a mask to protect them from you coughing on them. So, and I make that point because I don't recommend people wear masks when they go out in public. That won't protect you from picking up the virus from somebody else. When people have masks on their faces, they tend to touch their faces more, which defeats the purpose of not touching your face with your hands. So masks would only be used if you yourself have a respiratory illness, and so you don't pass whatever that respiratory illness is, because we have a lot of other viruses circulating in our community at this point in time, including influenza. So you want to not spread your infection, whatever your infection is, to somebody else, and that's why you may be asked to put a mask on, or you will be asked to put a mask on when you go into a doctor's office if you're coughing, likewise in an emergency department. And don't visit people in hospitals or long-term care facilities, or if they're elderly, if you are sick, because you don't want to pass on whatever infection you have to somebody else. Plan ways to care for family members who might be at greater risk of severe complications. And that, so you may have an elderly family members within your family circle. Think about how you might help support them if they do become ill.
Can we just talk for a minute about a couple of things that you said? I know you've got a lot more and I want to continue on, but just to unpack a little bit. So one of the things that we see all the time in pictures and on the television are people wearing masks. And I want to be really clear. You're saying that really doesn't help only after you're sick, so to prevent the spreading. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
Now, the other thing is we hear this term about people with compromised immune systems or underlying health conditions. Can you help us better understand what is meant by those terms and what sort of diseases or conditions those include, please?
Well, people might have heart disease, might have underlying lung disease, such as emphysema, for example, people who may be on chemotherapy for a malignancy, people who are on steroids, because some health conditions require people to be on steroids, so their immune system is suppressed.
What about things like, say, diabetes, or if I'm a smoker, or, I cough a lot just regularly in my life?
You may be more at risk of picking up a variety of viral illnesses if you have those conditions, not just COVID-19.
So, but those are part of the underlying health conditions, so
yeah.
Diabetes, lupus, things like that, is that correct?
I would consider that if you have a bit of a compromised immune system or you have an underlying chronic illness, you may be more at risk. They're finding that people who have more serious cases of COVID-19 are people who are older as well. So if you're older and you have those chronic conditions as well, you might be more at risk than someone who's older and doesn't have those chronic conditions.
So we've been hearing older as being defined as 65, but if I have an underlying condition, it might be 60 or 55.
It might be that.
Okay. All right. Now, you were talking about things we can do in terms of preparing. Should I be buying extra food? Should I be hoarding anything? I mean, these are things that we've seen people do. What would you suggest?
No, I wouldn't suggest be buying extra food. Just do your regular shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, if they end up having to stay at home to self-isolate because they've been in contact with someone or they have actual COVID-19, they can pick up the phone and ask someone to shop for them and drop the groceries at the door and not go in. So, I mean, there are ways around mm-hmm. not having to hoard. And when you hoard things, it means other people don't have access to them.
Well, I noticed, too, I mean, try to buy hand sanitizer right now anywhere in West Northumberland, and I think you'd be hard-pressed.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, for
but
things like...
But soap and water works very well as well.
So don't need to worry about if I have hand sanitizer or not. Just use my regular soap. I don't need any special soap or anything like that.
Regular soap. So I would recommend, you should have always have a lot of soap within your home. And when you're out, check out where the washrooms are, and then you can go in there and wash your hands with soap and water.
Great. Excellent. Now, I think we've talked already about the role of the health unit and the role of hospitals and doctors. What about other healthcare professionals, or what responsibilities do we have to those on the front lines who are caring for the public, and who's responsible for that? Let me ask that maybe in a better way.
Yeah.
I know we've already talked about your role. We've talked about the role of the hospitals and the role of doctors. But I'm now wondering about our responsibility in terms of people who are on the front lines with the public, people who have nurses, receptionists, people who are out dealing with the public, teachers who are in classrooms. What sort of things should we be doing to help those people in terms of helping to control the spread?
So workplaces also have a role to play in preparing themselves for a possible increase in a viral illness within the community. And they need to review their own policies and procedures. They need to look at their own continuity of operations plan to determine other things that they need to, ways they modify doing their work. They may decide, we won't be sending any people on international travel for conferences, for example. Or we may not hold a conference in our facility in the middle of this. They may want to delay it until the fall. So those are the things that workplaces might want to, should be thinking about, because they also need to be doing some planning. And actually, we are putting together some short videos that we are going to be sharing with our workplaces about basic things like hand washing, but also some planning that they might want to do to prepare themselves. They may be able to have some of their staff do what's called telecommuting. If they don't need to physically be in the office, they may be able to do some of their work from home. Or if they're in self-isolation at home. They may be able to work at home if they're in self-isolation.
So how then, you know, if I'm an employer and I'm listening to this, or I'm an employee and I'm listening to this, how do I get to, who do I look to sort of provide leadership? Because it doesn't sound to me like anybody really has responsibility to say, okay, hold on, everybody. I mean, let's take, for example, sports events. We've just seen the NBA and a whole bunch of sports organizations, no more live games. We're not going to bring people together for these purposes anymore. And it seems like these organizations are sort of self-directing to do this. Is there any mechanism where employers or employees can go that help either provide direction or is there going to be an announcement from the province or some other agency that's going to say, look, you know, employees, you know, you should be encouraging your employees to, you know, do telework or work from home or, you know, don't do these things and do these things. Can you help? Because I'm not clear where the direction comes from.
It would be the province is launching a province-wide public education campaign, and there are resources on the Public Health Agency of Canada website, as well as Ministry of Health website around COVID-19. And where, as I said, the health unit is also preparing information that we're going to be sending out to our many workplaces, and we're also putting information on our website so that workplaces can check out our website and also the other websites for credible information with regard to what they can do.
Now, what about, I know parents that are listening to me, what about school boards and universities and colleges? What about educational institutions?
Educational institutions are also planning. Everyone's in planning mode right now and preparing. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we've been sending information to our school boards pretty well weekly. And in fact, sent a recent update yesterday with regard to an update on COVID-19. And so I've talked to them, I'm emailing them. They're part of my 200 emails a day kind of group. And they are working very hard within their own administrative structure to prepare for this.
Now, what about municipalities? I mean, I know sort of in our public life, we have council meetings, there are public gatherings, there's events like, for example, this weekend, the Maple Syrup Festival is going on in Warkworth. What about those kinds of things? If I'm looking at maybe going to the Maple Syrup Festival, is that really a good idea at this kind of time? Or, you know, maybe should I be backing off? What would you be saying to people around these kinds of things?
I think that at this point in time, the province has not given us any direction regarding a trigger to implement what we call these public health measures with regard to mass gatherings. But the federal government has posted on its website a risk assessment tool that can be used to make those kinds of decisions. And those decisions are made depending on what's going on within the community. So as I said at the beginning of our interview, we've not had any confirmed cases within our geographic area. But if you're going, if you decide to go to an event like that at this point in time, you might want to consider keeping that social distance of 2 meters or 6 feet from somebody else, washing your hands, not touching your face, but doing things to protect yourself as you're going to that kind of event.
Okay. Now, what about public spaces like arenas or, you know, the various clubs and organizations that people belong to, or maybe even the YMCA or the local gym or your yoga class? Mm-hmm. I mean, are these things that you've just told me, do those apply to those things as well?
Well, we would recommend that they do what we call enhanced cleaning. It's always a good idea if you're sharing equipment to be cleaning in between individuals who are using the equipment for the gym, for example. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these facilities are associated with municipalities, and we're working with the municipalities with regard to their planning and their thinking about what they need to do should things need to ramp up.
Okay. Now, I know we're getting to a time of year where a lot of seniors, a lot of snowbirds have been down south in various countries, in southern United States, Costa Rica, Central America, Mexico. They're going to be starting to return now.
Mm-hmm.
What has there been any discussion about the snowbirds and what's going on there?
When people are coming into Canada through our borders, either through the airports or the land borders. They're being provided information with regard to their travel and self-monitoring for respiratory symptoms for the 14 days after they arrive back in Canada, and then who to contact if they develop any symptoms. So they're being given advice about what to do, and we're relying on our public to plan ahead for that when they're crossing the border, that they have to think about monitoring for 14 days when they return. And they'll be given information about that as they're returning.
Is it, considering the demographic of our area, is this an area of particular concern that we're going to start having these people return? I mean, we've talked about travel being a significant factor in all of this and the spread of it. Is that something that has been raised or gives you a particular concern?
I'm concerned about our long-term care facilities with our geographic area, because we have 40 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm concerned about our correctional facilities, because we have two fairly large ones within our geographic area. And so I know that they're doing planning to address issues, and I know that our long-term care facilities are doing planning and are getting support from the health unit and from the Ministry of Health. So I know that there's planning in place, but I mean, I am concerned about it. But I'm also concerned about people not panicking about things. So you plan ahead.
So
keep up to date on information on our website, the ministry's website, the federal government's website. If you plan to travel, check the travel advice on the federal government website.
That's all really important, and I know that staying informed is a critical piece in this puzzle so that nobody gets panicked. But let's talk for a moment about communication, because social media plays a large part in many people's lives, and there's been a lot of talk that there's a lot of disinformation being circulated. How can I make myself immune to the misinformation or disinformation that's being circulated?
I don't know if you can make yourself immune to it. I think you can read credible information from credible sites, and if you see social media information, you say, well, that's not true. If the Public Health Agency of Canada website, it says such and so, or on the Ministry of Health in Ontario, it says such and so. It's hard with social media, it's making it more challenging to deal with misinformation, and I agree with you about that. And you probably have a lot more literature at your fingertips than I about that.
So I'd like to get just step back for a moment. And you talked a bit earlier about what's been going on inside the health unit. And I'd like people to maybe get a clearer picture of what takes place inside the health unit, because oftentimes the public health unit is an institution that we really don't deal with on a regular basis, or we don't hear a lot about until things like this happen. So can you take us inside right now, your operation? You've talked a bit about the task force that you've created. How many people are actually working on this right now, and where are you finding the resources to tackle all this stuff that you're having to deal with?
I can't tell you exactly how many people are involved in it. It's a significant number of my staff. We have 123 public health funded staff within our health unit. And we have a variety of programs and services that we provide that are mandated by the province. And as you and I have discussed in the past, we've had our provincial funding flatlined for a long time, and now the province is going through a process of changing the funding formula and modifying the public health system and going through what it calls a modernization process. So our resources have been very stretched. So as I said before, we set up our Incident Operations Center on the 27th of January. We meet twice a week. We have planning teams that meet regularly, and they are planning for things like this. We set up an information line. And so that information line is being staffed by public health nurses who have received information to deal with questions that they're receiving, both from members of the public and our partners, as well as the health sector. We have regular teleconferences with the Ministry of Health twice a week. I'm starting to have regular teleconferences with Ontario Health East Region about three or four times a week. We've been working with our hospitals to ensure active screening protocols are in place and the appropriate staff have been tested for the proper protective equipment. I've mentioned the call center. We have information on our website and through social media. We provide resources and information to municipalities, school boards, and other community sectors, and we also do what's called case and contact follow-up. And that's that process I talked about, where if we're notified of anybody who has to be monitored, we're collecting a lot of information from that person. We are monitoring that person by phone over a 14-day period. And we also provide data to the province with regard to, we would provide data to the province with regard to any positive test results that we receive, of which we've had none to date. So our day-to-day lives consist of, for many of our staff, COVID-19. Because things seem to be ramping up more, because we've had more cases identified in Ontario and elsewhere in Canada, and because there seems to be an ongoing situation down in the United States, we are stopping doing some of our programming so that we can take those staff away from their regular work to assist our response. But we have to maintain essential services, such as our environmental health programs that deal with things like food issues, restaurant inspections, but also working with our municipalities around flooding, because we're getting into flooding season. And that usually starts in March into April. And so that takes a lot of our effort. So we're juggling our day-to-day work with our COVID work. And so many of us are doing our day-to-day work in the morning before we come to work and in the evening when everybody else has gone home. So it's been very long days for many of us, not just in public health, and throughout the system. And I think that we need to acknowledge the fact that, you know, my staff, our staff, are highly skilled, they're very professional, they're passionate, and they're thoughtful. They have been working very hard in our response, as our health sector partners, our municipalities, our school boards, and other partners. And we sincerely appreciate everyone's efforts to mitigate the spread of this disease as they prepare their respective responses.
You and I spoke back in May of 2019 when the provincial government was talking about making changes to the public health care system. I want to play you a clip from that interview, so just listen carefully.
Public health, I have seen funding go. In my 30 years in public health, I have seen funding go up and down. I've seen huge issues like Walkerton, like SARS. And every time one of these huge things happen, there's an inquiry, and public health gets a bit more funding. And then things quieten down. And then people forget about public health because we talked about public health being invisible and being behind the scenes. And then they decide to cut public health. And then that goes on for a while, and issues happen. And then there's another inquiry. So, you know, I see this cycle over the years.
So it may take a crisis before we gain our senses to acknowledge just how important public health is and how much funding it really needs.
I think it's ironic. This is all happening about 19 years after Walkerton happened. It happened in the month of May, 19 years ago. And I would suggest to your listeners, they might want to look up the Walkerton Inquiry Report on the government's website and read it.
What were the conclusions that sort of struck you that you think apply now?
There were changes in the system that led to disruption, and that's what happened to Wayne Walkerton.
I wonder if that was a bit of a prophecy back a year ago. Do you think some of those predictions are coming true now that we're facing this particular challenge in terms of how important public health system is to us?
What can I say? We're better prepared. We're better prepared post-SARS. However, our funding has been essentially cut, and our system is being, quote, modernized so that we're more nimble. But I think that the province needs to consider the impact of the decisions to, quote, modernize public health and cut the funding, particularly when we're in the middle of dealing with COVID-19. And my staff and I are working extremely hard to protect our public health. And it's very challenging to deal with that when you also have the province deciding to make changes in the system and decrease our funding.
So I guess what it comes down to is I think we're seeing right now playing out is the importance of the public health care system and how vital it is in situations like this. And wow, they may be, you know, how many years did you say Walkerton was? 20 some odd years ago?
Walkerton was now almost 20 years ago because it was in the year 2000. SARS happened in 2003. And I think that public health is a very important part of our fabric in the community, and we are invisible to most of the community, but my staff are very skilled, very passionate, very thoughtful, and very professional, and we're doing the best we can with the resources that we have.
Well, I want to thank you, and I want to please pass on our thanks and gratitude to your staff for all their hard work and their dedication, because where would we be if we didn't have that? So thank you to you, and thank you to your staff for all that they're doing.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate you taking the time. I know how busy you are, and when we were arranging this, I am so grateful that you can take the time to talk to us.
You're welcome.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So please tune in. I would also like to say to all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my posts to social media. Social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I'm grateful to those who demonstrate that you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online. So thank you to you. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.